Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80. The NFL Draft, guys, it is finally here. It is tonight. Oh, my God, a lot going on. We only got 2 more hours to get into all this. We had 2 elimination games in the NBA last night. We have Steph advancing and the champion from several years ago, plus last year's last 2 champions, just gentlemen swept their opponents. They're advancing. We got the NBA covered for you in 10 minutes with Alan Hahn. But, guys, this feels
– draft, man.
Yeah, I mean, and Key, it feels like it's a draft where anything can happen. Like, there's so – how many – first, it was – middle of the season, even when he wasn't playing. Thibodeau's going to be the first pick in the draft, right? Then it was, no, it might be one of those tackles. Evan Neal's going to be. No, it's not even Evan Neal. It's Icky. He's going to be. No, you know what? Aiden Hutchinson. That's the first pick in the draft. And now, Key, Mel Kiper, in his latest mock, just he got Trayvon Walker first to the Jags.
Yeah, that's what I remember. I always tell y'all, don't pay attention to all of the noise at the start of the regular football season leading into the draft. Pay attention to the draft as we get closer because things are going to change constantly. Now the tables are turned, they're set now. It's pretty much set now. You know, Thibodeau's going to go one. He's a consensus. I'm like, nah, not when they get to breaking down that film. When they get to breaking down that film, that thing, people start sliding. People start going up. I remember when I was coming out in the draft back in 96, Jay, and everybody was at the start of the bowl season. It was like, you know, it's going to be Jonathan Ogden. It's going to be Lawrence Phillips. It's like, well, no, it's not going to be any of them. We all know who it's going to be. And once I played that Rose Bowl game, the rest was history. Mm. It didn't change at all from January to April. It stayed consistent with who the first, second, third, fourth, fifth picks was going to be. In this year's draft, it's not like that. Yeah. It's gonna be some shocks and some surprises tonight. Watch what I tell you.
And because there's been so much shuffling about who's gonna be top 10, who's gonna be one overall, and a guy's this guy could. It feels like if you're picking in the top 10, Jay, it's almost like better to pick outside the top 10 because you're gonna feel as a fan like you got a steal. Oh, that dude was projected to go fourth. I got him at 16, right? Something crazy like that. But the Jets and the Giants are both picking twice in the top 10. And therefore, you could come away. Like, I've seen the latest mocks. Like, I've seen mocks where the Giants are taking Charles Cross and Jermaine Johnson. Okay. And I'm like, guess that's fine. But it's not like I'm not jumping up and down. Whereas someone picking at 15 could wind up with someone else. Like, you know, one of the guys I really wanted. So what is the dream scenario, right? 888. Say ESPN, 888-729-3776. Jay, what's your best-case scenario as a Giants fan for those top 2 picks?
So, taking somebody off the board, it's the top offensive lineman, mm-hmm. like the top, right? And then for me, depending upon like the best in talent that comes available with the next pick. So, if you're going for a guy like Thibodeau Key or Johnson the second, you can go with the safety like Kyle Hamilton, a CB like Derek Singletary, like the best available talent, because there's a lot of holes to be filled for the New York Giants.
I think for the Giants, what they need to do is draft for need.
Yes,
they don't need to draft. They don't need to draft anything just because it's there and they got a pick. They need to draft for need. Do we need a defensive end? Do we need a cornerback?
We need a lot.
They need to take what they need.
I wonder why.
It blows my mind, and I'm going to say this, because when you look on paper and you see the talent, you're like, you can't say this, but I feel like we can. Like, the Giants are in a rebuild.
Yeah.
Like, we're in a rebuild.
No, they're not in a rebuild.
They're in a rebuild.
They are in a rebuild.
Full rebuild.
No.
Full rebuild.
Saquon Barkley, not the answer long term. Daniel Jones, you don't think is the answer long term. You're still trying to find out.
He ain't got an offensive line or a quarterback.
They're kind of in a rebuild, man.
Or a receiving core.
Why did I just fire y'all up by saying they're not in a rebuild? they're not in a rebuild, right? You got a new coach with a new scheme in there. This potentially, what if this is the best offensive line this year in the National Football League based on the scheme that's put in by Brian Daboll in his office?
Is that's interesting. Wait, stay right there, Key. Have you seen that happen?
Leave.
Have you seen that happen where an offensive line has not performed well, and then based on maybe the addition of one player plus a change in scheme, they become a great offensive line?
We were 1-15. I hate to go back to dinosaur days, but we were 1-15. Mm-hmm. And our offensive line stunk. The next year, our offensive line was one of the best that there was.
Why? How many pieces did you
Why
add?
Why, though? Why?
We only added maybe one piece. Mm-hmm. I think we got like Matt O'Dwyer, and that's really it.
What happened? How'd you go from worst to first?
The scheme. The scheme was brought in. You go from Richie Kotite to Bill Parcells.
Yeah. Come on. No, that'll do it.
Like, come on.
Yeah, that'll
same,
do it.
Basically the same yeah. roster.
Yeah.
We basically had the same roster.
Parcells available for the Giants?
No, I don't think he wants to do any coaching.
Damn.
All I'm saying is, don't be so quick to poo-poo the offensive line because we saw them the last couple years messing around with Joe Judge in that offense. Think about it. They had three offensive line coaches coaching the offensive line in 2 years.
Well, that's listen, I will say this. Jay, last time the Giants were great, I was on New York radio on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio in New York, saying they need to draft an offensive lineman and need a left tackle. And they moved David Deal from left guard to left tackle, and he was fine, and they did
Double
great,
D.
and they won the Super Bowl, right?
Double so D, that worked out.
So maybe they can get a pass rusher or a corner if one of Sauce is there or Stingley is there.
So you address your need with the best available talent that's there at that position, right? So, Key, with that being said, that's the Giants. What do you think is the best-case scenario for the Jets?
Well, the best-case scenario for the Jets, obviously, is to get somebody on the defensive side of the ball, which is either an edge rusher or a shutdown corner, something that they haven't had probably since Darrell Revis, and a big-time wide receiver. They got to get a receiver to go along with what they already have. They have Elijah Moore, who's more of a, you know, jack-of-all-trades and a master of none. You can do a lot of different little tricky stuff with him. He's got some explosiveness to him. He made everybody wild in a handful of games last year. And then they got Corey Davis. We didn't see a whole lot of him in promising things coming over from Tennessee. They got Denzel Mims. They probably cut bait with him. But you go and you get you a Drake London sitting at 10. You go and get you an alpha dog wide receiver that's a big body, high point guy in the red zone. And then you put him with Zach Wilson and you grow. You build around Zach and you grow to really see what you have at the quarterback spot.
See, so I hear you on the wide receiver aspect, and I hear you on Drake London from USC. So similar, the similarities you guys have. But I still say best case scenario for Jets is they can land Deebo Samuel. Like, that's no? You're going to poo-poo it?
Yeah,
because you're talking about a guy that can turn a 5-yard slant into a 60-yard touchdown.
They're not ready yet. They're not ready yet, though. They're just not ready to get that and pay that type of price that it's going to take to get a Deebo Samuel for a team. By the time the team is ready, he'll be looking for a third deal, and he'll be older.
Or what about a worst-case scenario? Like, for the Giants, my best case for the Giants is – and worst case, I'm going to get to in a second, because Mel Kiper Jr.'s latest mock to me is almost the worst case for the Giants. But best case is Evan Neal, let's say, and then because Icky's gone, and then a pass rusher, one of the great pass rushers who's there, or one of the best ones, and then trading back up into the first, grabbing Linderbaum at center, right? What about worst case, though? Because Mel Kiper's got Charles Cross, even though Evan Neal's available, the Giants take him. Okay, but we need a run blocking on the right side, right? Not just pass protection, and we don't know if he can do that. We know Evan Neal can do everything. And then he has him taking Jermaine Johnson, right? Like, okay, I guess, right? But he's – I mean, well, like,
they
I don't know.
They got two bigs, only one guy on the defensive interior, one guy on the offensive interior.
Yeah, but not the guys I would have picked. You see what I mean? So, look, if you're picking 4-7, a nightmare scenario, you're still getting good players.
Why don't you like Cross from Mississippi State?
Well, it's not that I don't like him, but as I understand it, he's pass protection. We have a left tackle. They're most probably going to move whoever they get over to the right side.
You think he's pass protection because he went to Mississippi State and played in Mike Leach's
offense? Yes, exactly. I don't know if he can't do the other thing. I just don't know if he can.
Naturally, you would think that everything he's doing is on his heels and not on his toes.
Right.
But they worked him out. They've watched film on him, and they've seen enough to make him a first-round pick. Think about it this way, Max. Mm-hmm. If he's nothing but a pass pro guy, why is he rated in the top 10? Because
no, you're right, Keith. Like,
do everything.
When you have a front office that you feel like you're in good hands, they know better than me, right? So, okay.
Well, it's not knowing better than you. It's just that when a guy is projected at a certain position and a certain point in the draft,
the reason
right?
for it.
Yeah. There's a reason for it, and then we look at it and we say, "Well, all he does is all he can do is pass block."
That's the offense he was in.
I think it's fair to say, Key, they know better than Max.
So I think it's fair to say. Yeah, but Gettleman, it was unfair to say, but now it's fair to say.
Hey, Evan, listen, what's the worst case scenario for the Jets? Evan?
Right. Yes.
So worst case scenario for the Jets. Hear me out, Key. It's kind of a theory I have. It is not getting a wide receiver or a cornerback in the top 10. So, like, I've seen there's a scenario where Aiden Hutchinson falls to 4. And I think, like, there's some sports books where the favorite to go to the Jets is Aiden Hutchinson. If he's available at 4, the value there to get an edge rusher who could have gone number 1 overall is fine. I would take Aiden Hutchinson. But with 10, you either have to get a cornerback or a wide receiver. But if Sauce Gardner is there at 4 and they take him, I'm okay if they go D-end or offensive tackle at 10. My point is the Jets have to get either a wide receiver or a cornerback, not necessarily both, with one of their first top 10 picks. Because in that division with Tyreek Hill, with Stephon Diggs, with if Jameson Williams goes to the Patriots, they need either a shutdown corner that can shut those guys down, or they need a wide receiver who can score points with the rest of the division.
Where are you with that, Key?
I think that's good. I think the way Evan laid it out is perfect. If you get if either at 4, they're either gonna take Sauce or Hutchinson, depending on if Hutchinson's there or Sauce is there. Mm-hmm. One of the two. Let's assume that Sauce is there. That's great. Now you can move down to 10, and if you decide that you want a wide receiver, you can do that. Or if you want one of these defensive ends that may fall in your lap, you do that too, because Hutchinson may be gone at the top of the draft at 2 to the Detroit Lions, and then you say, well, I'm going to take Sauce Gardner at 4. Now I can do what I want to do at 10 and still get it. And if I take a defensive lineman, the defensive ends are not far off. It's not like Aiden Hutchinson is, you know, a 10 and everybody else is a 2. They're all like
what about Sauce and Stingley, Key?
The problem with – okay, there's a couple problems with the DBs. Stingley we haven't seen enough of, right, because he had a great freshman year but hadn't played many games. So we don't know what that is. Sauce, if you break down his tape and you really look at him, he's a nice shutdown corner, but what receivers has he really gone up against? So that plays a role in your decision-making too. You know, can he stay locked on man-to-man and cover the likes of Tyreek Hill, the Jameson Williams?
What's your gut tell you? What's your suspicion?
I think he can. Again, it goes back to the scheme. I like him. He's long. He's fluid. He's got great kick, which means his back pedal and kicking, driving out of his breaks to the point of attack is what you want in a corner. He's not afraid to mix it up, and he has a little sauce to his game. And I think people would play that in New York if he's any good.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. Let's get back to the NBA, guys.
Offensively, this is about as tough a team as there is to defend. And so they're so close to what they were pre-Kevin Durant when the Golden State Warriors were doing their thing.
You go against the Golden State Warriors and that ball is moving. You got all four of those guys moving the ball, popping the ball, shooting the ball, everybody playing a team version of basketball. That becomes exponentially harder to guard.
You know, getting through a series and winning 4 games against a good team, like, it's hard.
Oh, it's back to the NBA, and look who we have with us, Alan Hahn, co-host of Bart and Hahn on ESPN Radio,
really
noon Eastern. Alan, what's going on?
I love the music you brought me in with. I'm in the mood now. Let's go. Let's go.
Let's get it. Does
you better get in the mood in June. I know that much.
Yeah, you saw. Yeah, you saw. By the way, like you saw me the other day. I was away. I was at a hotel. I went right to the. I'm in the fitness. I didn't miss a day. No days off right now, Keith. I hope you're ready to run. I hope you got your track shoes on.
Say you went to the fitness facility. Did you go shoot baskets though?
That's, you know, I have been getting shots up, but I don't have to. I'm not concerned with that as much as I'm concerned with making sure that my cardio is elite.
Guys,
I can control that. I can't control my shot. I can control my cardio.
Guys, Alan Hahn didn't get to be the most improved player in the fourth grade, right? By accident. He knows what he's doing and preparing and getting better. Am I right?
And my dad was the coach. There was that too.
Yes. Yeah. The perfect storm.
Yeah, we've been arguing about it this morning and talking about it,
having
Alan. I think there's a lot, having a conversation about Steph and what's on the line, like what he has to gain by winning a title. I've argued one way and not always, the other guys haven't always agreed with me.
Well, okay.
What does Steph have to gain? Does he have anything to gain by winning another title?
And Alan, what I said is I think if he wins another title, I think the dude can crack top 10 of all time.
And I think it's important for him to be the best player on a championship team, no excuses type thing, which I don't think he's done yet.
I don't think it even matters.
Well, I mean, look, he's a Hall of Famer. Let's start there. That's done already, right? You could argue he's the best shooter in the history of the game. I don't think there's a big argument against that as well. His impact in changing the way the game is played in this generation is also, I think, very much on his shoulders and the way that he has turned the three-point shot into a weapon and the deep threes and everything else. I mean, the game has changed because of him. But winning another championship, which gives him four, that's elite company. I still say that is also something to discuss. But I don't know if he's ever going to be in that. See, I think that for all these guys, it's always about, can I get to GOAT status? That's MJ, that's LeBron. You know, if you want to put Kareem in there, you could put Kareem in there as well. But it's limited to three, if not four, if you want to go Bill Russell. I don't think, unless he wins six, you can move him into that conversation.
But, Alan, is it just a matter of number of titles? Don't you have to be clearly the best player on the court when you win the championship? He's never done that.
Will you stop with that?
I mean,
yeah,
come on
you
now.
Stop like, that. Come on.
All the things
well,
I've just listed.
Well, if you're talking about GOAT status, wait a minute.
But wait, nobody's ever talked about Steph, and I hear Alan's point, but nobody's talked about Steph being the GOAT.
Okay.
Nobody has, but that's the only thing left. That's left for him, right?
Is he
top 10 all time right now for you, Alan?
When we did the list a while back, and I had to get him in the top 10. I had to.
Yeah, he's right on the outside. Like, he would crack my top 10.
That's what I said. That's why I've always said it ain't. Nothing's going to change. I understand that Max wants to hang on to this finals MVP deal for whatever reason. When a guy gave you that when he didn't win the MVP and Iguodala won it, what did he give you, 27 points?
Right.
I mean, like, what more do you want from him?
Well, I mean, the reason they had to give it to Iggy, Alan, let's just be honest about it, right, is because LeBron was so much better than anyone on the floor. They had to give it to the guy who guarded him, right?
Okay.
It took him 16 games with Dellavedova as the second-best player. That's what I'm saying. And then they collapsed the next year. Then KD came, same team. He was the best player clearly on the Warriors, so he got finals MVP. That's something that Steph legit hasn't done. I can't put him in my top 10 all time when he hasn't done that. It's a pretty big thing, don't you think?
Well, it's a finals. I mean, you're looking at his one series versus the body of work, and I'm going back to listing what I just listed a minute ago. Hopefully you heard it. But when you are a player whose game changed the way the game is played,
yes.
Whether it's, again, whether it's George, was it George Mikan? And they yep. opened up the key, right? There's certain things, there's certain players that made you, we changed the rules or the style changed, how we play the game changed. He did that. Like that has to have, when you have that kind of impact on the sport, when you are the greatest three-point shooter in the history of the sport, like when you do things like that, I'm sorry, that's impactful beyond, well, he didn't win a finals MVP. Like honestly, like finals championships, those are team That's team success. But what he's done as far as his impact on the game, I don't think it's disputable. Now, whether you argue, we do this all the time. Top 10, not top 10, is he 11th? We can fight that battle. But I don't think you can take away from him his impact on the game already. And I don't think it changes with one more title. I only say if he gets to six or even five, then maybe you can like create a bigger conversation. But he's never going to crack the top four all time or top three all time.
I'm with you on that.
And definitely not top two all time.
I'm with you on that, Alan. That makes the most sense, too. So it leads us to a big conversation right now around the NBA playoffs. Who has the most to gain by winning a championship?
I love this question, Jay.
So good.
I love this question because you could go through, like, you could say Joel Embiid, but that's not realistic because that's not a championship team. So I'm going to say, and you could say Luka Doncic, but that's not realistic because it's not a championship team. So I'm saying Jason Tatum because that's realistic. They could win a title. And if he does, this whole seat at the table thing, that's nice after one series against KD on a broken Brooklyn team. If you do it all the way to the finals, you now have a seat at that table. That's how
agreed.
I feel.
Yeah, but the most in all of these dudes, it's just only one dude. And that's CP3.
Yeah, what about Chris Paul?
That's it. It's one guy because not only is Father Time ticking away, he's had opportunities, whether it was the Clippers, Houston, last year playing Milwaukee. And now, if he doesn't get it this time around, guess what? Golden State.
Yeah, Tatum going to have time.
Clippers, Memphis, Utah, Denver. I mean, it's just the West is going to be so crazy when everybody get healthy and everything. He's got to do it. He's got to do it. It can't be one of those deals where it's, oh, he was really great. Man, he just didn't win it. He's been put in a position now a couple times to get one. Just one. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need many. Just one.
Yep.
Okay. That I agree with, Key. And it was the other name I had on my list when I saw this question. It was both of those guys. I went Tatum just because I felt like where he is right now in the seat at the table conversation. But Chris Paul, for sure. And I worry because of the Booker injury. I think he's going to play game six. I believe he's going to play. And that's good to see. But if he's got to play through a hamstring injury, how much does it hamper this team and affect him? Because Chris Paul is a terrific player who brings everybody together. He's a glue guy. But he can't lead at this point in his career a team to a championship. He needs Booker.
Alan, we will talk to you in an hour about Doc Rivers' comments on his playoff record.
Keep getting that conditioning in, Alan.
Get that conditioning in.
I'm getting on the Peloton right now.
Who's
your instructor? Who's your instructor today? Who are you going with?
Today I went with Ben Aldis, who's from the UK.
Okay.
Went a little Fallout Boy today. I went a little Rock today. I'm angry.
Okay, I like it.
Who's going to coach the team is the question. That's the question, because Alan, under certain circumstances, can win MIP. Coming up, baseball's new problem. It's always something.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So you heard Pete Alonso got into it, right? That's the Mets' first baseman. Has the all-time record as a rookie. Broke Aaron Judge's 52 home runs as a rookie. Hit 53. That was 3 years ago. But Pete Alonso, the Mets' first baseman at the post-game presser on the Nolan Arenado, who is the gold glove, you know, excellent, probably best player on the Cardinals, third baseman. This is what Pete Alonso had to say about him getting buzzed.
I mean, getting domed up isn't fun. It's obviously not safe. It's dangerous, and there's consequences, whether it's on purpose or not. And we're going to stand up for ourselves. And I'm totally for standing up. I'm not just for standing up for myself. I'm totally for standing up for teammates.
They don't know, like, my temper. They don't know what I could do. I mean, if I wanted to put someone in the hospital, I easily could, but I was just out there trying to protect my guys.
So, guys, the Mets, and I don't like defending the Mets. I'm a Yankees fan. I hate the Mets, right? That's how it works. It's like Key with the Lakers and the Clippers, right? But the Mets have been thrown at a lot this season. Key, they've been thrown at a lot. And the dangerous pitch to a guy when you're throwing at him, if you're a pitcher, is behind the head, right? Because then the reaction is to lean back and out of the way, and you're actually leaning into it. You can get hit in the head. But that's not what happened here. What happened here is the Mets selected the Cardinals' best player in Arenado, right? He's their third baseman. Real good. And Arenado made his bones with the Rockies, but he's on the Cardinals now. And that's what you do. You single out their best player, and you send a message. He buzzed him. He didn't hit him. He didn't throw behind his head or anything. And it turned into a big thing. And I get what Pete Alonso is saying. Like, you know, we got to stand up for ourselves. But, you know, the unwritten rules of baseball, it's kind of weird, right? Like, no one did anything wrong, yet somehow everyone's fighting. What do you make of it?
I think it's hogwash. I think it's a bunch of nothing. I don't like it. Because if you're throwing at me to get me off the plate because you want to high and tight me to my chin, yeah, yes, the back of the head is true. But I can also get hit in my face, okay? I could also get hit in parts of my body and break bones. So I don't like it. The unwritten rule, people think that it's cool out there to look up and see guys in a brawl after somebody brushes them off the plate or hit them an eye for an eye. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. I've never liked it. I don't know why people condone it or think that it's cool on these teams in baseball. But if I was one of those players, you certainly going to have problems with me, because what if you injure me and something catastrophic happens to me and I lose my career?
Yeah, I didn't look like – did you think he was trying to hit him, though, or just trying to buzz him and send a message?
Probably the latter.
Yeah, I would say the latter.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting for me, like going to a couple of baseball games, and when I see things like this happen – it's almost like the crowd, they might be booing, but it's part of the entertainment associated with the sport. Is that fair to say a little bit, Max?
Yeah, people like every now and then, they like a bench-clearing brawl. It's true.
So it led me to a deeper thought on this morning. Why is it in predominantly white sports when there's fighting going on? Why is it celebrated? You know, I don't understand. Like hockey, baseball, when these things happen, why does it not turn into a way bigger type story? Because when I saw Isaiah Stewart try to fight LeBron James, it turned into a lot of people questioning the character of Isaiah Stewart. It was like big time. Or I'll give you another example. In football with Myles Garrett, with Mason Rudolph, it turns like, oh, Myles Garrett, really bad person. Like it just became so much bigger.
Yeah, Mason Rudolph reached for the helmet, and then Myles Garrett's like, okay, that's what we're doing. Took off his helmet, now Myles Garrett's the bad guy. Yeah.
It just became so much. And granted, the sports respectively seem like they catch way more notoriety and attention from the media, but it feels like those carry a different type of meaning with how you have to especially me, for like, well, now it's like I have to defend the character of who these people are. But when these things happen in baseball and hockey, it's like, oh, that's just what the sport is.
You know, this is interesting to me, guys, Key J. It's like when white people hear about white privilege, they misunderstand what it means. Like, the thing, well, I don't want to, you know, it's being treated like a regular person, like a human being, right? And I don't want to give that up. I just insist that everyone is treated that way. But the same assumptions are not made about black people a lot of times. So let me tell you what I mean. Predominantly white sport, people understand, right? Fighting sometimes happens. You're standing up for your teammates. Oh, it's okay. But in a predominantly black sport, I think the feeling is that you constantly have to elevate your standard, or people will make bad assumptions about you. Yes. They're thugs,
well,
right?
I think it's more about the sport than it is the color. And what I mean by that is, if there was a black dude in hockey that got into a fight, they would celebrate that. I'm sure that black dudes have gotten into fights in hockey, because there's a handful of us that play hockey. I think they celebrate that, right? I think in basketball, if a white dude got into a scrap, which, you know, probably not the best situation. What's the one dude that be getting in, Grayson Allen, getting into trouble all the time? I think they would condemn that if it's not.
Because the context of the sport, Key, it's considered predominantly a black sport. Hockey is considered predominantly, which it is, a white sport, right?
So yeah, that's what I said. Context, it's more about the sport than it is the individual's color and race, is the way I look at it.
But the reason a black hockey player or a white basketball player might be judged the same way all other hockey players and basketball players are is because the sport itself is considered white or black.
That's what I said, Max.
Yeah, yeah.
You said the same thing I'm saying.
But so it is racial, though, in that case, right?
I think it's just the sport. Like, blacks, we don't really play hockey. We don't grow up like that. Hockey rinks aren't in our neighborhoods. It's an expensive sport to play.
Let's take it to the NBA, the dress code in the NBA. What was the dress code really about?
Exactly.
Getting white America, middle America, for lack of a better word, right? That's how they're used interchangeably, the way urban means a lot of time black, right? When people use it, it's a colloquialism. It's about getting them to see the NBA as, oh, this isn't the quote-unquote thug league or the what we really know what that means, right? These guys are okay. Look, they're wearing suits. There's definitely – but that's part of what a predominantly black league is up against is what a lot of black people are up against, having to always constantly prove, don't make the worst assumption about me.
No, that's true. Yeah. That is true. There's no question about it. And I chuckle because – But Max, you say they're okay, they're safe.
These ones are okay, right?
Like, even when Isaiah Stewart had that situation with LeBron James, there were a lot of people that were on national TV saying that as a black man, there's a responsibility, like, for us not to set that type of standard, right? And so it feels like there's an extra added on weight when something like that happens in these predominantly black sports, whereas in predominantly white sports, that weight just feels like, okay. Yeah, it happened. We'll move on.
You don't start from a deficit in terms of people's assumptions.
It just clocked in my brain, like watching it and hearing people talk about it. It didn't carry the same type of energy. It's fascinating to me. That's all.
Meantime, the Mets stood up for themselves. The defending champs are on to the second round and now face a huge test. That's next on ESPN Radio and SiriusXM Channel 80.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tunsil made an NFT with his mask bong photo from draft night. Now, I just said a bunch of words in the English language, Key, and I know NFT has been explained to me 10 times. Do you know what an NFT is, Key? Like, could you explain it to a kindergartner?
I could not explain. I thought it was like a picture or something digitized or
a virtual or something?
Yes, yeah, that's pretty much what a non-fungible token is.
A wasted money or something. That's all I know.
A lot of new billionaires out there with your wasted money.
Are they virtual or are they real? Like, when you say billionaires, do they have an NFT house or is it an actual house?
No, it's actual picture that's kept on the blockchain. All right. So it's that picture of that moment for him that people are then going to bid on, essentially. And it drives up the market price of what the picture is.
Like a digital baseball card.
Can't you tell Jay is really into this?
Yeah, all day. I mean,
Jay is like, yes. Explain some more to me.
Well, it's like, Key, when you have a family photo, right, that captured a moment in your life. Let's say there was a photo captured by, you know, Kobe Bryant making a game-winning shot. Like, that's a moment. Like baseball cards, you're like, oh, I'll pay whatever amount of money for that baseball card. Yeah. Essentially, it's the same thing. It's that image captured in a technology, a blockchain that is in. Trade it in the secondary market for years, right? And the value of it with that moment just keep going up and up and up and up and up.
Why would I want to buy Laramie Tunsil?
Because it's an asset.
NFT.
It's an asset.
Of a guy.
Because it's a memorable moment. It's a memorable moment, and the bigger he gets, the bigger that asset gets.
It's like memorabilia, Key. Yes. Why would I want to buy, like, it's almost like buying, like,
Tom Brady's
signed Keyshawn Johnson jersey or the last touchdown thrown by Tom Brady until he retired. It's that. It's memorabilia. It's just digitized.
It's just virtual.
Yes.
You can't touch it.
It's virtual.
By the way,
it doesn't mean it's a less asset.
I want to be able to see it, touch it, put it on my wall, feel the Wagner card.
But Key, when your money's in the bank, you can't see it or touch it. That's virtual. That's currency.
You know, key.
You can just pull, you have to pull it out. You can pull it out. But it's still virtual now.
You ain't convince me because I see it and I can touch it.
You know,
you have to take it out of the bank to touch it, though.
Look,
you remember the Larry David Super Bowl commercial?
Every day.
Key. Key, you remember the Larry David Super Bowl commercial where every time there was an invention, the wheel, the fork, he would always poo-poo it, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's you and me right now. Like,
you guys are old guys.
If you put Key and me back in the day,
who needs
the wheel,
a cell phone? Why would I want to carry around this cell phone?
The wheel? We could. Well, I got two wheels right here. I got your legs
right here.
I don't need a wheel.
No virtual houses and stuff, man. Nope. Not doing it.
Watch. I wonder how much
I wonder how much that asset goes for.
I wonder how much he's getting for that pick, Ev.
But it feels like that value could evaporate in a second.
Jay, you going to buy a virtual house?
What?
Or a real house?
Virtual property? No, I'm buying real houses. But
you
I do own a couple
ocean
of virtual
out
properties.
In Arizona?
You do.
G-Shawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
And we have here on Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80, ESPN basketball analyst extraordinaire, Monica McNutt, ladies and gentlemen. What's up, Monica?
What up, Cuzma?
Ain't he? Is Ain't he there? Ain't he?
Monica.
I don't think Ain't he. Am I here? Right,
oh, there you go. There you go.
Hey,
oh,
ain't you know.
Key's into Auntie again, just like that.
Why you always call her Auntie?
That's why I couldn't talk to y'all, because Key don't know how to act. Good morning.
Good morning.
What up, Cuz?
So, Monica, the Bucks defend so far. They're making their title defense. They just knock off the Bulls in five. What do you take away from that series?
For me, Max, I think it's still the Bucks bench. Like, they're the defending champs, and I think sometimes we forget that. The Middleton injury caused, you know, people to do a little bit of a double take, a little bit of concern. But I think Grayson Allen and Pat Connaughton have done a really good job stepping up in that stead. And so I'm so excited for this Bucks-Celtics series.
Monica, what is, you know, when you see the way that the Boston Celtics have won games, right? And we talked about on our show with you a couple times, Jason Tatum taking a seat at the table of the greats, right? Looking at the Kevin Durants, the Giannises, and like the best of the best, the LeBron James. Do you feel like they have a legit shot with Jason Tatum when it's all said and done to be at that table with the greats?
Yes, without question, Jay. And I think what makes, I think, where Jason is unique, and maybe it's similar to where Giannis was last year, because people still were out on whether or not, you know, you would consider Middleton and Holiday a big three of the caliber of other big threes that have been constructed around the league. And then we got our answer. I think when you look at the Celtics roster, like, it's still wild to me that, and I'll admit, I was at the camp that was like, God, this isn't working. Do you break them up? And Ime just remained steady the entire time. He's like, any organization would love to have two guys of their caliber. We need to figure it out. And they figured it out. And so I don't know that, I mean, Jalen and Marcus maybe make up their big three. But the point to me is that around Jason, there's such tremendous buy-in. There's such tremendous depth and on both sides of the court in terms of what they do and how they've been able to hang their hat on defense in the calendar year 2022. And they just seem to me to be rolling with so much confidence. Like, I cannot wait for this series.
Monica McNutt, ESPN basketball analyst, is joining me, Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning as I'm sitting in Las Vegas getting ready for the NFL draft, which will ESPN 7 Eastern time. Monica, what are you looking forward to most in this matchup between the Bucks and the Celtics?
how the Celtics are going to game plan for Giannis, right? Like, Giannis is a guy that easily commands the same sort of attention that KD does, but we're talking about two very different players in terms of their points of attack and their bodies, right? If you're bumping Giannis all the way through, one, does that actually end up taking a toll on you? Because that dude is a machine and a monster. And two, does this become a much more physical series on both sides of the ball? And then, like, as much as the Celtics give them their props for sweeping the Nets, it literally was the most perfect storm for them, right? The Nets were one of the highest ISO teams. ISO sort of, I won't say it's easy to defend, but in that series, like, it played into exactly how the Nets wanted to defend it schematically and with their personnel. The Bucks don't deal with as much ISO, and you have to find Giannis, who has been particularly bothersome when in his matchups versus the Celtics when it comes to transition. So the Nets, or the Celtics, or excuse me, the Bucks play it, like, I think during the regular season they were the third highest team in terms of pace, and the Celtics were ranked around 24th. Mm-hmm. So, like, the pace is going to be a thing. Like, I just cannot wait for all the X's and O's in this one.
You know, Monica, when you watch the Bulls series versus the Bucks, the Bulls took a record-setting, franchise record-setting in the playoff history for them in charges taken on Giannis. I think he had like 13 or 14 that series, right? So when I think about Al Horford, or I think about Robert Williams, the size and length, like, that's going to be something that's going to be interesting to watch, because Giannis dominates the paint, but will the Celtics allow him to get to the paint to be dominant?
Right. And then so in addition to that, Jay, like, Giannis is, his assist numbers are up, right? Like, the game, you can see for him where the game is starting to slow down a little bit. And the Bucks, compared to the Nets, are a far more complete team, right? So if he's not taking these charges and making the right passes, what do those rotations look like? There's obviously going to be a guy that gets loose. Like, how do the Bucks capitalize on those opportunities? Like, I just cannot wait. This is going to be amazing.
I'm with you, Monica. So with that being said, all right, that, we're talking about the Eastern Conference. So the Eastern Conference is blank to lose. Who's to lose is the Eastern Conference?
I still feel like it's my I'm going with it being Miami's to lose. Into this.
Yes.
Not the defending champs.
I'm starting to be with you on this one, Monica.
Let me get it right. Let me get you all together. Going into this, I definitely had the defending champs top board, right? I did not know that we were going to get this version of the Celtics. And the injury to Chris Middleton, as much as,
yeah, man,
you know, you maybe lose your Robin, I actually think that that is more problematic on the defensive end as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if Jason Tatum does take that leap, right, I'm bringing my folding chair to this table, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Like, Drew Holiday is going to have his hands full. And, like, you're going to need somebody with similar size, right? Like, don't get me wrong, I think Grayson Allen has a flagrant type play in game 3 with Marcus Smart, and it becomes a thing in this series. But, like, he doesn't have the size that Chris Middleton would have presented, right? And so that injury and the way that the Celtics look, I think the pendulum is swinging a little bit, because I feel like Miami has a one-up on whoever comes out of this.
Good analysis. Hard to argue with that logic.
Mm. So, yeah. I'm sitting there watching. Let's go to the Western Conference. I'm watching the Golden State Warriors, and I know that Steph had 30 last night, and he put Denver to sleep. And we'll see what happens in the Minnesota-Memphis series. But are you a believer that – because I know you said – that Golden State's run is over now. So are you still on board with that comment you had a couple weeks ago, or are you starting to believe in Golden State?
I'm going to just let y'all inside the veil a little bit. That particular day on First Take, producer Ryan Stalon got in my ear, and he just pushed me over the edge. I did not have the Warriors winning a championship. The window being closed was, you know, a First Take type take. I did think that the West was going to the Phoenix Suns if they were healthy, but this Devin Booker injury is a big deal. Like, we'll see what he looks like when he gets back on the floor. Now, to your point, Jay, I do think that something strange could happen in the Memphis Golden State series.
Yes.
I do not think that the play-in game was a one-off. Yes. I think when you go down that roster, Memphis has the size and the speed to contend. Now, it takes another level, we'll call it, of basketball IQ and focus that I do believe Memphis has. I think Taylor Jenkins is an incredible coach. But I think the mental stamina it takes to guard the Golden State Warriors is probably the part that might be most concerning, because physically, I think that they're up to the challenge.
But Monica, they don't have the experience that Golden State has, though.
Right, and that goes to the mental stamina, Key. I hear you.
Yeah, they could do this in their sleep.
But see, here's the thing. Like, we've seen the Warriors be peppered with injuries throughout the course of the regular season. And while Steph has definitely, you can see where his body has changed, like, y'all, them dudes been in the league just as long as KD and them too, right? And so we have this macro conversation about the changing of the guard. I just think Memphis has the physical abilities. They have the great coach. Golden State is going to have to guard them as well. I think we're in for a great series if we get the two of those. And that's not a knock, but, like, these young folks, they coming, man. Like, they coming.
Monica spitting hot fire. Monica McNutt. Got to call her niecey, not auntie. What's the matter with you?
Exactly. No, see, auntie, no matter what she says, Max, you can never argue with auntie. You
can't say well, that's a good point, Monica.
That is true.
The draft niece is here, Key.
Sister, you can tell them to be quiet. You can never tell
that's
auntie
next.
To be quiet.
ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.